Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ryan Lehrer on WNYC, and for the last month, as many of you know, we've been following the U.S. troop surge in Iraq with Time Magazine's Baghdad bureau chief, Bobby Ghosh, who's been good enough to come on with us 4 weeks in a row for these weekly Thursday updates. We welcome Bobby again for his last visit in the series, and it comes as he has an investigative report in the forthcoming issue of Time, which he will talk about with us in advance of its publication. It's about how al-Qaeda has undertaken its own surge in Iraq to match the American surge, even as other groups like the Mahdi Army have decided to lie low. We'll talk about that and more now as we welcome Time Magazine Baghdad Bureau Chief Bobby Ghosh back to WNYC. Bobby, thanks again for this whole series. Hello from New York today.
Greetings from Baghdad, Brian, anytime.
And let me begin with the news of right now. There was, of course, the attack yesterday at the Shiite holy site in Samarra that brought down the two golden minarets on the shrine. Now, this is the same shrine that was attacked in February of last year, the attack that really began the current intense phase of sectarian violence that's lasted ever since. Who attacked the shrine again and why?
Well, the finger of suspicion falls immediately to al-Qaeda because it has all their fingerprints. It is unusual for any other group in Iraq to attack a religious site, even a Shiite one. And al-Qaeda took responsibility for the previous one. The assumption is that they were responsible for this one, too. The reason why, my suspicion is that they were trying to goad the Shiites, and specifically the Mahdi army, to come out from the vacation that they've been on, to come back into the fight, to bring chaos back into the streets, especially in Baghdad, and by doing so, to undermine the troop surge that the Americans are on.
Is it working?
So far, no. The big difference between when Samarra was bombed last year and yesterday is that there are now 30,000 American troops armed to the teeth in the streets of Baghdad. And so if the Mahdi army is tempted to come out and fight, I think that would be a great disincentive, the knowledge that they would run straight into the teeth of American weapons. And I think that is one of the reasons why they haven't come out and responded in the way they did last year. There have been a few attacks in other parts of the country. We know of at least three Sunni mosques being hit in retaliation. But by and large, the Shiites have held their fire.
Let me ask you an underlying question here. If this was done, and things like this are done by al-Qaeda, specifically to drive a wedge between Sunnis and Shiites, and everyone knows it, why doesn't it actually make both groups angry at al-Qaeda and bring them together to fight the outside force?
Well, there are some people in both groups who are trying to do that. There are moderates, moderate social leaders, political leaders, even religious leaders who are trying to do that. Unfortunately, their voices are drowned out by those of the extremists, the people who have weapons in their hands and are not afraid to use them. These are the people who are most susceptible to this sort of provocation. And in the past, they are the people who have driven the agenda in Iraq. And moderate Iraqis in larger and larger numbers are leaving the country in dismay. I think more and more people have given up hope and are taking their families away from Iraq.
Your investigative report for tomorrow's issue of Time is called The Enemy's New Tool. What's the tool?
Well, it talks about how the al-Qaeda and the Sunni insurgency is responding to the surge, as you said, with a surge of their own. They're using a whole bunch of new strategic and tactical techniques to hit back, to capitalize on the fact that there are more American targets now available, and to try and get as much as many American casualties as they can. One of the ways they do this is by using a new technique with IEDs, the roadside bombs. They're building bigger bombs. They are burying them deeper in the ground. These are harder to find. Even the high-tech gadgetry that American soldiers have at their disposal can't always find these bombs, and they do tremendous damage. They can destroy American troop carriers and American transport that is especially made for IEDs, even weapons that have enormous, even vehicles that have a lot of armor. We've seen videos, we've heard examples of this, and it is giving American commanders something to worry about.
So a lot of it is technology and tactics. You quote one Western official describing the Al-Qaeda response to the American troop surge as, you do your surge, we'll do ours. And so there are these kinds of attacks you were just describing. You talk about how they're going after different kinds of American targets than they did before, helicopters, for example. You describe how they lure American troops in for two waves of casualties, like happened ironically on Memorial Day. What did happen on Memorial Day?
Well, on Memorial Day, a small surveillance helicopter was shot down north of Baghdad, and we assume that that Al-Qaeda was involved in that too. But this was a more sophisticated strategy at play here, because as soon as they shot down the helicopters, they knew that American soldiers would rush to the scene to try and help their colleagues. And they set up a whole ambush of IEDs along the roads to that site, which meant that when American units rushed to the site, they were hit by the IED. So two people died from the original helicopter crash, and then six other soldiers were killed, many others injured by the ambush. And we're seeing more and more of these sort of double whammies in different parts of the country.
And you describe this one particular grotesque ambush strategy where they stack human feces on top of explosives. What does that do?
Well, what it does is when this is particularly done inside crowded city neighborhoods, when American soldiers are on foot patrol looking out specifically for IEDs, they're looking for any suspicious looking mound of earth or garbage. But if you put a pile of human feces on top of it, it's human psychology at work. They're calculating that the soldiers would be less likely to go investigate under that, and when they sort of pass it by, then somebody can detonate the explosion and cause casualties.
Time Magazine Baghdad bureau chief Bobby Ghosh with us again live from Iraq for the fourth and final installment of his 4 weekly updates on the troop surge. And you had specific stats from the surge in this article that I hadn't seen before. Claims by U.S. and Iraqi officials that during the surge they have shut down dozens of bomb factories, arrested nearly 18,000 insurgents, and killed more than 3,000 others. How much of a dent does that represent?
Well, if all the 18,000 people arrested are indeed insurgents, then that is a significant dent. But we've seen from previous military operations that a lot of the people arrested are eventually found to be innocent, or there's not enough evidence against them, and they're released. And if that's what's happening here again, then it may not be such a big dent. The fact that 3,000 insurgents have been killed, I have interviewed insurgent commanders who've told me that they're not in that sort of a numbers game. They don't care how many of their people are killed. They say that there's always more where those came from.
Is it true? Won't they run out of people at some point? I mean, you quote U.S. Army Vice Chief of Staff Richard Cody, who says finding and defusing roadside bombs is not the long-term solution, only finding and killing the bomb makers. So if they really have an unlimited supply of insurgents, then that won't do it either. But do they?
Well, they may not be unlimited, but they're certainly in the tens of thousands. We've heard various estimates from U.S. specialists on the subject about how many are sort of directly involved in the insurgency. The numbers range from anywhere between 50,000 and more than 100,000. And that's not even including the foreign fighters who are steaming into the country from places like Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Egypt and Syria to join in the jihad. So I don't see they're running short of people for a long time at the current rate of killing.
Is there any issue of they want it more than we do in this U.S. battle with Al-Qaeda in Iraq? You know, like even that grotesque use of feces that you were describing. I mean, maybe the American soldiers wouldn't go to that length, and obviously they'll do anything to win, anything to protect themselves. But is there some issue of intensity of motivation at work here?
Well, there's certainly a little bit of that. After all, these are people who think that they are fighting in the name of God. In their twisted minds, they're fighting for God, and they believe that dying in such a fight would take them straight to paradise. So they're actually, many of them, looking forward to actually dying. It's difficult to fight against these against people with that kind of mentality. But let's also remember the other thing at play here is that Al-Qaeda is taking the long view. They're here for good. They're not here for 6 months or 6 years even. They're determined to stick it out. Many of them are Iraqis. This is their country. They're not going anywhere. Whereas American soldiers, somewhere in the back of their mind, they have a deadline. They know that after 12 months or 15 months of their service, they're going to go home. And American generals also, especially now with all the political heat coming from Washington, even they are beginning to think of an end game and an end point where they leave this country. The insurgents, the jihadis, they're not going anywhere.
You said an interesting thing. Most of them are Iraqis. If we're still talking about Al-Qaeda, how many of the Al-Qaeda fighters in Iraq are foreign fighters, and how many at this point are Iraqis, if you have any way to tell?
It's hard to tell, but it's clear there's enough anecdotal evidence that there are more and more Iraqis now. A couple of years ago, I would have said more than 90% of Al-Qaeda in Iraq were foreigners. About a year ago, I would have said it was 50-50. Now I think it's fairly clear that in terms of sheer numbers of bodies, there are more Iraqis in the fight. The commanders and the decision makers and the experts tend to be foreigners, but they're teaching their Iraqi recruits very quickly. The leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq now, at least the titular leader, is an Iraqi himself. So the local fighters are beginning to play a bigger role in the jihad, and that's something that America has to be worried about, because these are people with local knowledge, local family networks, and a determination to remain.
These 2 months, April and May, have been, or really the last 2 months, were the deadliest for American troops since the war began, with about 230 killed in the combined 2 months. Now, defenders of the war say that's what's got to happen. A troop surge means precisely more confrontation, more troops getting killed in the short run to win the war in the long run. Do you think that's right or wrong?
Well, it's inevitable that when you put 30,000 more American soldiers in harm's way, then more soldiers will come to harm. But the real question, the real way to measure the surge is what this is doing to the enemy. And what we saw yesterday in Samarra is just one of the a whole series of indications that the enemy continues to be strong, continues to be brazen, and continues to attack with impunity in places that are supposed to be highly defended. The other big problem with the surge is that it's not just a question of what American soldiers are doing here. A big part of the surge is to do with Iraqi soldiers and Iraqi police. They are supposed to be doing a lot of the work, and that's the sort of the soft underbelly of the surge, if you like, because the Iraqi soldiers and police are completely falling down on the job.
Still,
they were supposed to be in charge of protecting Samarra, and they made a hash of it.
Bobby, as we come to the end of this four-week series, I'm curious if you ever stop to think about Iraq 5 or 10 years down the road. Do you see a best-case scenario and a worst-case scenario? Do you think about it like that?
Well, after 4.5 years in this country, I've stopped fantasizing about best-case scenarios, Brian. I have lots of friends who are Iraqis, and I hope for their sake that things will get better and that the moderate opinion of majority of Iraqis will one day be strong enough to drown out the extremists. Unfortunately, having been here for such a long time and having interacted with the Iraqi political and religious leadership, I am personally not optimistic. I think things are going to get a lot worse before they begin to get better.
How much power does the U.S. have to influence the future, no matter what American leaders decide, for Iraq, in your opinion?
The U.S. has a lot of power to decide. The question is whether the U.S. has the stamina to stay here in large numbers, and I'm beginning to get the sense of watching the news from back in the U.S. that Americans are beginning to lose faith in this operation in Iraq. And if that is the case, if the U.S. Is not committed to remaining here long term in large numbers, then all I could see for Iraq is doom.
John McCain and some of the other Republican presidential hopefuls use the word genocide to describe what they think would happen if the U.S. pulls out anytime soon, especially Shiite on Sunni genocide. In your estimation, how accurate is that?
I think that is very accurate. I think that is almost certainly what will happen. The Shiites are, as I mentioned a couple of times, they are on a break right now. They are not confronting the Americans in the surge. They are taking a break. They are arming themselves. They are training up their soldiers. They are training up their commanders, and they are waiting for the day when the Americans leave. They are sharpening their knives, and when they leave, when the Americans leave, those knives will fall on the Sunnis, and I think we will see carnage on a truly horrific scale here.
And if the Americans stay, 15 seconds.
If the Americans stay, they will need to adapt their strategy to an enemy that is willing to do almost anything. I think the current strategy is not working. The Americans need to stay, but they need to rethink the way they operate in this country.
Time Magazine's Baghdad Bureau Chief, Bobby Ghosh, this has been so informative over these last four Thursdays. Thank you for taking so much time with us. This has been really, really important for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Anytime.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.